Okay, we're on the six perfections this evening. And as we've usually done, let's start with the understanding what the six perfections are. Anybody? Chuck?
Well, each one individually, or?
Seems like reading the six perfections over, that the guiding one is wisdom. That if you have too much of anything, it has to be balanced with wisdom. Whether it's generosity or effort, morality. In morality, you mentioned the hardening. And so I think that the guiding one is number 30 on wisdom.
Okay. Anybody else? Molly?
I was trying to work on your question about what makes it perfection versus just the
what makes generosity into the perfection of generosity, or morality into the perfection of morality?
Right.
That question?
Right.
Yes, okay.
So I was thinking that it comes to a point where you can, if you can bring all that, all of these perfections into your active daily life, and make it happen or make it work, not just in sitting or thinking or studying, that might be what makes it perfection. That's what I came up with.
Okay.
More or less.
Anybody else? Everybody knows everything about the six perfections. I can go home. Great. Put it in circulation. It's on.
It seems like rather than a group of do's and don'ts, that it's more what you've committed to that's going to make it work for you.
Okay.
My understanding of what seems to me that to make them perfections is when you recognize them as your nature.
What does that mean?
Well, one thing is, you know, to make the effort of being generous is one thing, and another thing is to recognize that what you are is naturally effulgent and...
Naturally what?
Effulgent.
Oh.
And... generosity is your natural expression.
What do people think of that? You think it's true of Perry? Okay.
That's all I have to say.
No, I give her five. Since I have the mic.
Yes.
No, I get what you're saying.
Just hold it.
Saying,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. My take on them was that maybe because I'm such an active person, I always see action in these things, and I see a progression through these perfections. So beginning with generosity, I can act more generous than I really am. If that makes any sense. Not too far away, but at least somewhat more than I really am. And in my experience, when I do that, it changes me. I don't know how. It's a mystery to me. But it could be along the lines that Perry is saying. It could, in some way, wake up that true nature in some way by just acting on it. And then my level of, for instance, generosity rises. And then I can act a little further beyond that level, and it rises again.
No.
It may be that it's activating or waking up that dormant nature.
That makes sense, but is that what makes a perfection, generosity into a perfection?
That
process is generally speaking true. When we act a certain way, it creates a propensity to act in that way and extends it.
Right.
But is that the quality that makes a generosity into a perfection, or morality into perfection, that the fact that it builds on itself?
I was thinking it might lead to the perfection of it.
Yeah, but what makes it? What's the quality of makes it? They have this term, perfection of wisdom, or perfection of generosity. So you have generosity and perfection of generosity. What's the distinction there? I've got a couple of people, but go ahead if you want.
I can sort of see where I can tell you what I see coming way down the road, is that there's, it becomes effortless. It doesn't require an action anymore. There's no separation between me and anybody else, and so
okay.
Generosity is like breathing.
Okay. Anybody else?
I'll just say one thing, that I just think it means not looking for any return or result. That all these behaviors or actions are not for ourselves ultimately, but for others in a real way.
Okay. Diane?
I think you get to the perfection part through emptiness. So,
what does that mean?
Well, it's similar to what you just said, I think. When you, when you're empty, then you will naturally act in a manner that's consistent with generosity, if that's what the situation demands, or discipline, or.
You know, I'm not very bright.
Okay.
So, what does being empty mean?
It means no self.
I'm really getting confused. Keep going. You got to help me out here.
Well, I think it goes back to what you said about the no separation.
Well, since you're on the spot, I don't get it. What are you talking about?
There's no separation between you and what you experience.
These are all very good words. I have no idea what they mean.
Well, gee, it's just tough enough for me to get to this point, Ken.
Yes, and now you get to take a step further.
Okay. I'm trying to think of another way to say it.
Rather than trying to think of another way to say it, what about trying to get your point across to me? You can forget about everybody else here right now. It's just, this is between you and me. So how are you going to do that? Now, you want me to help you?
Yeah.
Here's your hint. Susan did this with you 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's your turn. You remember?
Yeah.
Okay, your turn. And you got a much easier subject than you. You got me. That's a joke.
I'm getting confused now.
Okay. So you know something, you sense something, you feel something.
Right.
Communicate it to me.
I don't know how to say it in a different way than from what I've already said.
Okay. You're trying to explain it to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there another possibility besides trying to explain it? Is that the only form of communication that exists?
No, that's not the only form of communication, but I can't seem to apply it to this situation.
What's another form of communication that you know?
Well, showing.
Okay. Why don't you try that?
My goodness.
Do you know other forms of communication?
Yeah, they don't seem to apply.
Well, just list some of the other forms of communication.
Right.
I think we can
touching.
Leave touching, okay.
So come give Ken a hug.
Okay, what other? What else? I think we can leave email out.
Oh, I don't want any more of that today.
Mm. Okay, so. Well, I'll give you another hint.
All right.
When you can't explain somebody, something to somebody, can you lead them through the experience?
Through the experience of not being able to explain?
No, lead them through the experience of what you know or sense.
Well, I guess I can only compare this to the no-head stuff.
Oh, what no-head stuff?
Well, I've been doing a lot of the no-head stuff this
what
week.
What are you talking about, no-head?
What we talked about last week about thinking about how you're going around.
Well, there isn't any last week. There's only here and now.
Well, all right, then. walking around pretending that you don't have a head.
Why would I do that?
Because it's actually pretty wonderful. When you do that, you really are more in the experience. You're not thinking about the experience or judging it or you're not doing anything like that. You are just there.
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, let's stop here. Now, where's Diane stuck?
In explaining.
Got another mic here somewhere? Yeah.
In explaining.
Okay, anybody else?
Or describing.
Thinking, describing. Does this sound right to you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you want some help?
Do I want some help? Oh, yes.
Well, you've got a bunch of people here you can ask.
Well, help me explain this.
No, you're not going to get any help explaining it. You just want some help, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so ask for help. It's a four-letter word, but yeah, it's okay.
I need some help.
They've abandoned you.
And to think I almost didn't get here tonight.
You're here all alone.
Oh my God.
Just the two of us. I mean, there's nobody else here. You've asked for help, and there's been nothing.
There's no help.
Amazing. There's nobody else here.
I'll have a question. So, did Ken explain the no head thing to you last week?
Yes.
He explained it to you?
He talked about the experience of walking around without a head.
Did he talk about the experience of walking around without a head?
That was my interpretation of it.
Did you have an experience in the class of having no head?
Yes.
How did that come about?
It was through, how did that come about?
Pardon?
I'm thinking aloud now.
Oh, that's permissive.
I'm trying to remember back to that. It was through listening to the interchange between Ken and Isabel.
And how did Ken direct Isabel?
Ken gave Isabel a different way of looking at her experience or looking at her mind.
So do you think you could use the same direction with Ken?
That's actually what I think I was trying to describe. I mean, with the perfection, it is that type of experience that is the perfection.
Yeah. You have an experience which translates into an understanding, right?
Right.
Okay. If you tell me about the understanding, do I have access to the experience?
No, you have access to my understanding of the experience.
Yeah. Does that help me?
Probably.
Probably? How does access to your understanding of your experience help me?
Well, I suppose...
Because did you get your experience from understanding somebody else's experience?
Oh, no, not from understanding their experience. I see what you're getting at.
Okay, so helping me understand your experience, that doesn't do anything for me, does it?
So is that why I couldn't explain it?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Because that's what's happening. There isn't actual real communication there. You're telling me about your experience. I don't have the experience. What do I do? You follow?
Yeah.
You had enough?
Yeah.
Okay. Jessica, you had a point earlier.
I'm just gonna
There's a microphone. Go ahead.
Some time ago, I was driving down Santa Monica Boulevard, and I was approaching an intersection, and there was a man crossing through the intersection, and he fell, an older gentleman. And my response to that was to pull over, to go into the intersection and get him, take him to the side of the street, ask him where he was going. He said he was trying to get to the bus. Asked him where he needed to go, if he needed a ride. He was going home. I took him home. And there was something about that experience afterwards that I realized had nothing to do with me in terms of my own agenda or thinking it was the right thing to do to pull over, to pick him up and take him home. It was a natural response to what was arising in the moment. And it just came to mind when you were talking about what makes something perfect as opposed to otherwise. And I think it maybe it has something to do with that natural arising, that it has nothing to do with the person who's doing it.
Yeah. This has been said by a few people. And that's a very concrete example. And that's the quality. What Dave was saying about no separation, this is true. What Diane was saying, I mean, everything you were saying was fine. But the reason I was pushing you is because it was all explanation. There wasn't any communication of experience. And in terms of interacting with each other, in terms of understanding it, that experiential quality is really important. So that's something, and we'll talk more about, I mean, you were at the Probing Presence program, right? Yeah, that was much more about communicating experience, and we're going to do more programs along those lines because it's a very important skill to learn. If you look at the descriptions of the six perfections on the website, which are taken from a song by Milarepa. I can't remember the translations that's up there. Does anybody have them here?
I have it.
Oh, thank
your
you.
Translation?
Yeah. Thanks, Jill. Yeah. I've translated this so many times. This is this translation. Okay. For generosity, nothing to do other than stop fixating on self. That's our normal way of relating to experience is me here, experience there. Our ordinary way of relating to experience is me here, experience there. You know, even if it's our own thoughts and emotions, it's me here, thoughts there in some way. You know, there's that separation. That's fixation on self. Or because this is poetry, I said fixation on self, it'd be actually more accurate to say fixation on sense of self, because there isn't actually a self to fixate on. When you're not doing that, not fixating on the sense of self, then there's no separation. And as Jessica described, there's just a natural response to what arises. And as what Perry was saying earlier, in a very deep sense, we discover that generosity and morality and patience and all of these things are our nature, our expressions of our nature. And the Theravadins go up the wall when you talk about having a nature, but it's a way of talking. It's not giving it an ontological status, so just with that proviso. Okay. Now, does this make sense to you, Molly? And it's different from your... when you can live that way all the time, which is actually pretty far down the road, then it's fully integrated in your life. But we take these as practices, again, going back to Dave's point, that when you make a point, when you act generously, it creates a propensity for generosity. But that isn't just what we're interested in here. Because there are some people who have tremendous penchant or tendency towards generosity, and it can be out of balance. There's another process that takes place, which is important. What is the essential gesture of generosity?
To open.
Yeah.
What did you say?
To open. Yeah. You can't give without letting go. To let go, you have to open your hand. Very simple. You know, if I keep that closed, it doesn't happen. I have to, go ahead. I have to open the hand. It's okay. We don't need it. Thanks. Physically opening emotionally opening, that initiates a process in mind.
In what?
In mind. And how and when I use the word mind, I'm using it a bit differently from the way that it is ordinarily used in English, which is associated with the intellect, principally. In Buddhism, when we talk about mind, we talk about how we experience the world, how we experience. That's what mind actually means. Now, what arises when you open? What happens?
Joy.
Yeah. What else? Joy. You want to be back on the spot, Diane?
Not yet.
Pardon?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Loving kindness.
Loving kindness. Anybody else?
Less separation.
Connection.
Okay.
I was offering the mic to anybody else who wanted it, but my response would be a less separation, a sense of being, you know, at one with. Everything that's with whatever is happening
well,
at that moment.
Ultimately, yes. But just a... How to get here? When you open, how much is there to respond to? How much is there to respond to? A lot? A little? Yes, Joe.
A lot.
A lot. What do you need in order to be able to know what to do?
Be present to it.
Oh, you guys are all jumping way down the thing. Discipline.
Oh.
Right? Have to know what's appropriate and what's not. Right? All the stuff. But you have to figure out what's appropriate and what's not. Morality. Yes.
I had this experience, and there were two different things that happened. One of which is because you assigned us to study this past week. I came across one description of how these paramitas work, and that is that they're all present in each one in order to come to fruition. And I feel that's what you're going to, that when you give, and there's discipline there, and there's morality, and there is wisdom, and there is all the rest, that's what makes them perfect. That's how they perform.
That's true, what you say. And there are many explanations along those lines. It's not quite what I'm doing right now. I'm actually going through a sequence.
Okay.
Okay. So generosity leads to discipline and morality, which in a certain sense is a form of generosity. You're giving yourself a way of approaching the world, which supports things. What does morality require?
Patience.
Patience. Beginning to see how it works?
Yes.
Okay. What does patience require?
Effort.
Yeah. What does effort require? Consistency of intention. In other words, stable attention. Or, I mean, I'm saying require, but it leads to the development of, would be better to say. And stability of attention leads to the development of wisdom or insight or understanding. Follow? So, in these six perfections, we have a couple of things. One, there is a sequence through which we develop. Two, they take what can be ordinary activities or ways of relating to the world and distinguish or point out a special quality which takes them out of the range of ordinary virtue and non-virtue and puts them makes them into expressions of being awake. Okay? Everybody with me? Okay. Now, that perspective is very important when we're reading through these descriptions. Those who want to be awake have to give even their bodies. What need is there to talk about things that you simply own? Be generous, not looking for any return or result, which is a point that somebody raised earlier. This is the practice of a bodhisattva. Now, within these lines, which, if you read them just as they're put there. It sounds like, oh, that's right, you know, well, giving your body, so what is, you know, so if it's something, oh, no, my body's much more precious to me, so that should make it easy to give something that I simply own. And yeah, that makes sense. Being generous means there are no strings attached. But if you read between the lines or underneath the lines, in the first two, those who want to be awake have to give even their bodies. What need is there to talk about things that you simply own? Well, in the ordinary way we relate to the world, when would you think of giving your body? Never. Never. Okay. So, well, you give your life.
Yeah.
However, what way of looking or experiencing the world must you have in order to consider giving your body? What's the only way you can be looking at the world and make that? Pardon? Yeah, I mean, that's the common phrase. But that this ordinary experience that we have of me having a body in this world isn't all there is. You know, there is another way of experiencing the world. That's what you're referring to, right? Yeah. And in the next two lines, be generous, not looking for any turn or result. This points very, very directly to what Milarepa was saying in the song. No fixation of self, on self, or a sense of self. Because it's the sense of self that makes you think in terms of having a return from what you're doing. Joe, may I borrow the Milarepa again? If you can't tend to your needs because you have no moral discipline, then intending to take care of the needs of others is simply a joke. Isn't that wonderful? No. Well, it's straightforward, yes, but since we're at this time of the evening, how is contemplating this? Brutal. Okay. Anybody else? What was your experience here? I mean, it's somewhat humbling, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Observe ethical behavior without concern for conventional existence. Do you feel that same quality coming in here? So even though he's not making any explicit reference to regard everything like a dream or whatever, it's actually implicit in here. Milarepa, on the other hand, says, for morality, nothing to do other than stop being dishonest.
I like Milarepa's song better.
Well, this is one of Milarepa's gifts. For you, okay. Okay, since you give Molly the mic. Where is it most difficult to stop being dishonest, Molly? For you. We'll see if your answer coincides with mine.
Where is it most difficult?
Yes.
To stop being dishonest?
Yes.
Well, when it comes to myself.
Say a bit more about that, please.
I don't know, just like recognizing things that I'm doing. And I think that I'm not doing, but I am.
Aha, very good, very good. That's right. That's the most difficult place to stop being dishonest. When I translated this earlier, I translated it having no shame about anything, which actually comes out the same way. That's another one. Sorry, it was not being deceitful, but I decided that dishonest got to the point more quickly. Another definition of morality at this level is never knowing shame, which you really have to be free of a sense of self for that, in the right way. And then for patience, for bodhisattvas who want to be rich in virtue, a person who hurts you is a precious treasure. What was this like?
Yeah.
Could you say that in another way, please? Yuck.
Yeah, could you state that more succinctly?
No, I will give you a little more of a...
Well, it's that twinge where you... I sort of recognized the truth of that, but I didn't want to give in to it. I still wanted to be resentful.
Yes.
That Schadenfreude, you know. And And yet I recognize that when somebody's really hurts you in some way or does something harmful that you see as being harmful, it teaches you about how much you're protecting yourself.
Right. Also, and how does this connect, I think it does, with such cherished notions as righteous anger?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
This makes me think of my husband and the PC, which has been sitting on our table for the last 2 months. And he's not, his health isn't really great right now. He's got bad arthritis. So I can't push him to go beyond just plugging one thing in. He says, no, I can't do anything else. I have to think up my questions first, and then we'll make an appointment and go down to Apple and we'll talk to them and find out how to do this. And
driving you nuts.
That's it. I mean, I've been pretty patient.
Yeah. for those of you who don't know the story, Isabel was saying, I don't get any of your email notifications because I don't have a computer anymore. And, you know, that's becoming an increasingly important mode of communication. And so I said, well, go and buy a computer. So she went down to the Apple store, picked up a nice Apple, and then her husband said, we can't do anything until we have read the manual.
We read the manual. We read the manual for the printer. We've read every piece of literature that came with it. And he's finally gotten up his courage to open the top, and then we plugged something. He plugged something in the back, but that's as far as it's gone. We haven't called, like the...
Would he be open to someone coming over and showing him how to...
No. I asked him. I said, I've had an offer from somebody in my meditation group to come over and work with us on this. What about it? And he says, no.
Well, I applaud your patience.
Well, I was just going to ask Isabel a question.
Go ahead. We've got two mics. Dave?
Just tell me if this isn't an appropriate question, okay? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
How do I want to word this? Do you need his permission to have someone come over and show you how to use it?
Well, I think that it's not so much that. I think if somebody came to the door and said, I'm the person that... Isabel asked to come over and help me with the computer, he'd probably close the door in his face. Say, no, get out of here. Didn't ask you to come here.
Yeah. It's
okay.
But here's what you do.
What?
Tell him you're calling the Apple store and call one of us.
What?
Tell him you're calling the Apple store and call one of us.
The Apple store doesn't come to your house. He knows. This guy is okay. Pig-headed, but he's not stupid.
Okay.
That's okay.
Thank you. I hope he doesn't. Well, he can't listen to this. That's fine. Okay. Well, that's up to Isabel to deal with now. Okay, moving on. Cultivate patience for everyone. Completely free of irritation or resentment. And you noticed how we could all slip into the irritation and resentment. I mean,